Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Tom Beal. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Susan, and hello to our faithful listeners. As a former journalism professor, I'm really looking forward to today's program on the local alternative press.
It's a great follow-up to last week's program on small-town newspapers, and we have very interesting guests today. First will be Rick Lamb, publisher of Toons, which its masthead declares offers cartoons and puzzles, fighting ignorance and apathy with a smile. Since 1987, making it the longest-lasting alternative publication in the area. We'll also hear from two other people who've been involved with publications that were not so long-lived, Loris Olson from Ames News Online and Gavin Aronson from The Progressive. At the end of the hour, we'll have a conversation with the young journalists at the Ames High Web.
Clearly, we need to start with Rick Lim, who terms himself Publisher Poobah of Toons. Toons is widely distributed in central Iowa, but some people may not be familiar with your publication. Rick, can you tell us what it is?
I'd be glad to, Thomas. Toons is a weekly compendium of the best cartoons and puzzles that money can buy. We've got same crossword LA Times uses. I buy cartoons from nationwide syndicates, and I try to get the latest, best, funniest stuff I can find. And I love each and every feature we got, and plus several more I'd like to print if I had more money.
And you also do a few original tunes of your own, Rick.
Well, I get a lot of baloney from my ego, but yeah, I put a cartoon I draw on the cover every week.
And it's very relevant to our area. When did you start the paper, and how did you happen to do it?
Well, I started way back when my boss asked me just what I thought of the operation I was working at, and then I was able to be self-employed and started up in 1987. Always loved cartoons. That's how I learned to read. I was looking at cartoons in Des Moines Register way back when. And my dad was an ad agency man and was always had to research the standard rating data books of who reads what and when. And cartoons always had the highest readership rating. Even in Playboy magazine, it had the, you know, the naked girlies. People read the cartoons first, believe it or not.
And also in the New Yorker. I think that's one of the great
yes.
popular
they got
there.
Great cartoons.
So you started this publication. What were you hoping to accomplish?
Make a living. I love doing cartoons, and I'd love to spread cartoons all over the world, of course. But, I had a family to feed. Still do. Well, my wife's taking care of me pretty much. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Well, it's lasted a long time, so obviously you have been filling some need that people in our community had. And, well, I gather you'd feel that way, right? That the publication is more than just a cartoon publication. It really goes
well,
beyond that, doesn't it?
It certainly is to me. I get so upset with all the bickering and fighting and no sense of humor on all the horrible things out there in the world. And cartoons have a way of they're like mind candy with no calories. They make you feel good, make you laugh. They exercise your sense of humor. And the political cartoons have a way of cutting through all the nicey-nice baloney that covers up so many issues, and they have a way of getting right to the point.
And occasionally they can evoke or provoke some visceral response from readers.
Yes, they can.
Have you ever run a cartoon that had people marching on you with torches and pitchforks?
Just torches. I don't recall the pitchforks. There was a white Aryan nation that was going to set my house on fire and shoot my children and me as we ran out the door because they thought we were too lovey to all the people they hated. Yes.
Well, did that cause you to be a little more cautious as to the kind of cartoons you printed?
Not really. No, I've had a few other incidents, but they're so rare. Most of the stuff I get, people really like them.
Well, you do a lot of personal work. This is I've had people say that your publication is kind of a throwback to the way newspapers and other printed media used to be, where the people actually went out in the community and talked to the people and sold the ads and collected the money and got feedback from their listeners and readers in this case. Is that what you are? I mean, that's my impression of what you do even now.
I wear out a lot of shoes. I'm out walking and talking to all my advertisers and anybody I hope will be an advertiser. And I've taken over 6,000 and some photos of residents that I've printed. And that includes a lot of people from Iowa State and just walking downtown in Ames or different stories.
That brings up a good question of who reads Tunes and how many people read it, would you say, in a weekly edition?
Oh, there's no way of telling for sure, but way back when the Iowa State Daily did a big survey, it helped me more than I ever could have imagined, where they had 60-some% of the people were reading Tunes, and it was higher in the college. And it's people of all ages, really. If you like cartoons, you like them from when you're a toddler till the day you die of advanced old age. You really do. It's not a demographic thing. It's more a psychographic a type of people. And the people that like cartoons are, well, they're more fun to be around than people that don't like cartoons, Tom.
Your publication is many pages. I didn't count the number in the current issue.
We're around about 20.
And that's quite a production project, though, isn't it, to put something like that out every week?
Yes, it is. Oh, Nancy Qualley, the editor, she works a lot of hours every week putting everything together and making it look good.
Well, you're technically the publisher. Are you also technically the editor?
Well, she's got the editor title. We work together.
So you let her do much of the work in putting the paper together. And
yeah, that's what I pay her for, and that's what she's good at.
And in your role,
it works better if I do my job and she can do hers. And same with Brenda Backman, the office manager. I think we call her the office czarina. Whenever I'm in the office with her at the same time, her productivity drops, and then I got to slink back and stay quiet and let her concentrate so she can get her work done.
So poobah is a kind of a ceremonial position that you hold in your own company then, though.
Yeah, well, I'm the guy out hustling the ads, you know, and I got to make sure they look good, and I like the cartoons, so it's a lot of fun.
You have a number of columns in the paper besides just cartoons. Can you talk about some of the printed material that you run?
Oh, I sure can. Trevor Soderstrom's been doing a column for, I don't even know how many years now, but I don't like him that much because people always come up and say, we like Trevor's column a whole lot. We kind of like your cartoons, but we really like Trevor. You know, that gets a little stinky after a while, Tom.
Yeah, I can see that.
He's a lot of fun. He's been a minister and a history professor and worked at the Jimmy Carter Center with correspondence and speech writing. And he's been all over the world, Australia. And he's got a lot of great stories to tell.
Well, you have another column called D's Zine, the tail end of magazine. Can you talk about that column?
That's Jason Arbogast. And he's just been submitting stuff in the last year or so. And the D's Zine is a title of that column of Jason's.
What does he cover in his column?
I think he just makes up his own entertaining things. He's done things on time travel, and him and his buddy D go off on wacky adventures. And he's been a lot of fun to read.
Well, you mentioned that the columns are popular. What else would you say are the most popular items in your paper?
Well, in my own mind, Tom, I like to think my cartoon's the big, big feature. But people like Trevor's column and the puzzle freaks, I call them, they love their puzzles. The big L.A. Times crossword I publish, every now and then they'll send me another crossword that looks about the same format. It looks the same to me. But I'll get 200-300 calls and emails saying we printed the wrong column, don't ever do that again. The Wonder Word has a lot of fans, and they were upset because I wasn't printing it big enough, so now we're printing a whole darn half page of the thing. And then now they want two. So
it is amazing how popular those quiz items can be.
Yeah.
You publish a free distribution or free circulation paper. That is, people don't have to subscribe, though they can. And so that means you have to make it on your advertising. And this is the way traditional newspapers used to be. They charged a small circulation fee, a nickel sometimes a copy. But most of the revenue came from advertising. Well, now we have a new era where so much advertising is going to online outlets. And so as you look at a typical newspaper, it's very thin. Your paper is still pretty fat, and it's printed. It's a traditional kind of newspaper or publication, let's say. How do you explain that? How is that possible?
I could beg for advertising more than your average advertising salesperson. I don't know. People like cartoons, and they buy the ads because they like it, or their employees like to have it, or they want me to put a stand in their place to distribute. And I've just been fortunate that way.
You clearly have to have your advertisers have to get results. Otherwise, it would just be a donation to you.
And I accept donations. Yes.
Well, but many of the firms, for example, we're looking at a full-page ad on the back of your current issue, and it's a color ad. It's obviously cost a little money to the people who put it in, and they must have concluded that it was worth the money. They were going to get a response to that, and I assume that's something you tell them when you're out selling advertising, that this is a cartoon paper that actually gets results.
Well, yeah, of course I do. Yeah, I want people to get their money's worth. If they don't buy advertising, I'm not printing tunes. It's that simple. I don't have a big sack of money I'm sitting on.
Brings us full circle to the original question, which was, why did you go in business? You said, well, I want to be able to support my family and so on. So you've been at it a long time. Is it working out the way you had hoped financially?
I was skinny with hair when I started, Tom. And now I'm a little plumper and I have no hair and I got an extra chin on the way. So I guess it's been okay. I have more fun at my job than most people will ever have. I laugh and tell jokes and people love to tease me because I'm the cartoon guy, so they always got jokes and do things to make me laugh. And I'm lucky. Boy, I've had jobs where the boss told me, quit smiling. You're not working hard enough if you're smiling, and things like that. And I get a smile all day long. It's wonderful.
Small time clown, this country boy has come to town. Well, I stole a car and drove to Omaha. I'm doing my best to stay away from the law. When they finally caught me, well, I hear what they done. They threw me in jail for having too much fun. Too much fun, that's news to me. Too much fun, there must be a whole lot of things that I never done. I ain't never had too much fun.
Well, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 on your FM dial, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Tom Beal, and we've been speaking with Rick Lem, publisher of Tunes. Now we're turned to a very different kind of venture with Loris Olson. Loris, would you describe how and why you decided to launch Ames News Online and Ames 365?
Certainly, and hello. I was the section editor for the Des Moines Register up here at the time. There was a weekly section, and they brought me up to run it. And I'd been here about a year, and I knew that I liked Ames. It was probably the best place I'd ever been as a journalist when it came to the discussion of very local issues, taking on a very elaborate discussions with highly educated, highly motivated people. There were changes going on at the Register. The first time I'd worked there, it was still owned by the Coles family. And coming back that second time, it had just been sold by the Coles family to Gannett. There were a lot of differences in management style, financial base, policies. And I knew that I would want to leave. So about a year before, I started looking for an opportunity to do online. I did investigate doing a print publication. In fact, I called Michael Gartner, who had, of course, been the editor here at the Ames Tribune, won a Pulitzer, still is involved with journalism through CityView and his Green Umbrella company down in Des Moines. And I said, what do you think? I'm getting some people asking me to bring up a weekly up here and then do online. And his advice was, do not bring up a print publication. And so I really shifted toward the online. Plus that I could see even several years ago, I guess it was 2005, so 9 years ago, I could see that is where the industry was going to have to go because of the shift in financial model and how we were starting to exchange more and more information on the internet and electronic communication.
Well, I know a lot of people sampled your publication, but many did not, and they didn't realize what a terrific service you were providing. We do have a daily newspaper. A lot of communities have lost their daily newspapers, but you are offering another viewpoint, additional news. You covered stories they weren't covering and so on, and yet despite a Herculean effort on your part to make this work, would you say, were you too early? Because it seems to be the trend now to move online. And here you were online 9 years ago. Were you too early for this community?
I think there were several factors. Too early, I certainly was at somewhat of the forefront. There were other journalists who had come from traditional media who had left. Some of them tried the nonprofit model, which I did for a while, and then left that franchise and rebranded for Ames News Online. But there are also some things that happen on the internet or when you start a small independent news organization that you get some feedback and you get a connection with the community and those that don't like you in the community for what you are doing, and that can affect your business model very much. Certainly the hardest thing for me, and I tried at the beginning, was to keep the advertising and revenue separate from my need to, go ahead and go and cover and be strong in my coverage and to get information out there. So I think that as we've all discovered, even big corporate, as you will, onlines like Patch is the biggest one that's failed, okay, that I don't beat myself up a lot for not succeeding, because when you have large entities failing and you have major newspapers closing for lack of revenue. But I did have people who would not purchase ads from me because they felt that they were then paying for editorial coverage, or if I was writing something about them, I was writing about an issue that they were involved with, that they couldn't control my editorial coverage. Whereas in a traditional media source, you normally have more of a separation. I really also tried to go with the individual donation, or I called them voluntary memberships, so that I wouldn't have to put a paywall on it. And that didn't work, and I refused to put the paywall on. But I actually had people, politicians, who said to me, I won't contribute even though I buy I take the Tribune, because I feel like then I'd be paying you for my coverage. So it was a mixed as far as how you go ahead and take that out. I was lucky, if you will, in a way. I didn't have to borrow any money except from our own, then my boyfriend and now my husband's, internal investments to start it. So every penny we paid out was either from our own investment funds or from the donations and the revenue that I could get through ad sales. But I couldn't get enough, and I believe many newspapers and other independent news sites on the line find this, that you normally can't monetize an ad significantly enough to make it worth the cost of selling and designing it, where you still can in print.
Well, you really made a real effort to make this work, and I know you said you lost a lot of money in the effort, and this is a challenge any pioneer, I guess you'd say, makes when they launch a business not knowing whether it's going to make it or not.
I used to laugh and say I was a critical success and a financial failure. And I did, as I said, when I started out a traditional model, I had a salesperson. And then I found that I wasn't going to be able to sustain at that kind of format. So I got an opportunity to buy the Ames Bulletin Board, which is a print publication that was very well known, always has been owned locally, and I would have been the fifth local owner. It was in, I think, about its 58th year of publication. And I purchased that, but I knew right away I was even going to have to rebrand and change that. And so I had to take it from a small black and white publication with no original editorial in it and had to blow it up, bring in color, bring up actual articles. There's another cost involved there. It did allow me to pay for a reporter for 30 hours a week. And I was lucky that my first reporter that worked for me had come from the Des Moines Register also and had been laid off. And then the next reporter I had interned at the Register and was from Ames and was a very promising journalism student who had then graduated from Drake. But I could not afford to keep either one of them. At what I was paying, I couldn't offer benefits. And I'd already laid off my salesperson. So once again, you are in this cycle of having to reach out. And in one way, being able to reach out there to the community is great because I really felt that we did develop credibility. And we did offer an alternative to the Tribune. But I could never get anyone to buy in. There's also the fact sitting in the Ames market. You have the biggest newspaper in the state 30 miles away that I worked at twice, okay? And they are at the forefront of launching even online. There was a change in ownership at the Tribune, going from the Omaha World Herald, which was at least a little bit still local, to Stevens Media. And Stevens Media is very much in other areas into electronic media. And so they're out there competing. I'm also at the same time, anyone, Rick or anyone else, you're competing against, quite frankly, the Iowa State Daily when it comes to revenues. Part of the resources that I should in most markets have been able to depend on due to my very extensive community calendar was to depend on the restaurants and depend on the bars. That money was all going to the Iowa State Daily. Okay. And then the last one is Iowa State Athletics and all of the publications related to them. And they take a lot of money out of the community also. So I did try hard, and I'm very proud of what we did. We did an awful lot with very little.
I was going to ask you, do you think the time is right for something like this again? But you suggest that perhaps the current Tribune owners have adopted the online format and perhaps they preempted the opportunity for someone else to come in.
I felt more like that prior to purchasing advertising from the Tribune during my recent unsuccessful run for office. And as I was being given some quotes from the Tribune and I asked for some from their readership and user quotes, I realized they were charging significantly more, sometimes as much as 8 times more for an ad than I was charging. And yet their online impressions in those categories where I would have wanted my ad, there were days that I hit them at Ames News Online. So that let me know that this is a much more fragmented market. And I think also there's still an opportunity. I think really a lot of people want to see a combination, though, of a product that offers video and audio. We didn't do any video or audio. I think collaboration between like radio stations and maybe video production companies would be the way to go. It's very hard for any organization that wants to put out competent news, especially local news, because the amount of time you have to put in to become familiar with the beat, it's very difficult to do it on your own. And so I think that there'll be a new model coming forward that will incorporate a combination.
Thanks for being with us today, Loris, and for sharing your extensive experience.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in central Iowa. We've been talking to Rick Lem of Tunes and Loris Olson of Ames News Online. And now we're turning to a third alternative publication, The Progressive, which is no longer being published. We have the former editor of The Progressive, Gavin Aronson, to talk about that unusual newspaper. Gavin, can you describe what The Progressive was?
I think it started out, at least I say this, as a kind of like a socialist newsletter that was published as a result of meetings at the Boheme, which is another great alternative spot. Ames no longer is around. I'm not sure if the founders would describe it as that, but I saw an opportunity to kind of expand on what they were doing and do some more long-form journalism, because I was freelancing at the Ames Tribune at the time and doing short newspaper-length stories, so I kind of changed it into a zine format. It started in January 2007, I think, and then I came on board a few months later and eventually took over the role of designing the magazine, and also I was an editor with Nate Logsdon, who the two of us kind of led the show after a while.
Led the charge. What form did The Progressive take? What did it look like, and how did you distribute it, and so on?
It was a zine, so basically just a sheet of printer paper folded in half as the pages, and we distributed it around Ames, and I think we occasionally brought some copies to Des Moines, too.
It was a printed publication at a time when online stuff was developing. Had you thought about just doing it online?
No, but if we were to do something like that now, I think that would be the way to go. Although the print ended up working pretty well because we funded it through local advertisers or businesses running ads in it, so we were able to stay afloat that way, I guess, so it worked out.
You described it as a socialist publication. I know you have traditional journalism background and training, so and generally that is requires the writer to keep his personal opinions and so on out of the stories he writes. In this case, did you feel at The Progressive that you could promote a particular point of view or an attitude?
Yeah, I mean, I say socialist more as a joke more than anything else. I mean, definitely there was a voice, and that's fun. It's a very different style than newspaper journalism, which I don't know. I've enjoyed having the breadth of different experiences and stuff. I did do several stories that were more, not really taking a perspective myself, just kind of presenting a range of views.
Would you say that one of the purposes of The Progressive was to cover stories that were being ignored by the traditional media?
We had the benefit of being in college at the time, so we had more free time, and we just wanted to kind of do a creative project on the side, and that was a good time and place to do it. So,
well, did you ever upset anybody to the point where they complained about your publication?
We lost an advertiser one time because I did a story on medical marijuana when they were debating that in Des Moines, and we ran an ad on that page. And
what was the ad for or against?
It had nothing to do with it. They just didn't want it associated with
the topic was
illegal drugs on the same page.
Did
the
person ever come back?
No, we let that go.
Did you have other writers in The Progressive as well as yourself?
Yeah, we had a lot of writers. It was all volunteer-based, but Nate Logsdon, he initially wrote our editorials, and then his interests became primarily musical now, and he, of course, is a manager of DG's Tap House and Ames, and he works at the Iowa Music Store and stuff like that, and Maximum Ames record label. He and I both solicited contributions just from people. We get ideas, we'd have meetings, and just something would come to mind, and we'd shoot somebody an email or give them a call, and that worked out pretty well, so we got some pretty interesting content.
When did The Progressive finally end?
It ended, well, so we had been talking after I left Iowa in 2010 for initially New York, and I was out of the state for about 4 years before I came back a year and a half ago. And we were initially talking about bringing The Progressive back or something or keeping it afloat. So then it was just online for a while, and I think it's obviously hard to keep it afloat from out of state, and the quality was like all over the place, and I decided to quit it at some point when I was living in San Francisco a couple of years ago. I can't remember the exact date, 2012 maybe, 2013.
Well, do you think something important was lost when it ended?
We also had a music venue called initially the Ames Progressive Office or Ames Progressive Space. I think at the end it was called the Collective Arts Space. And that was what you just asked reminded me of what someone told me about that, were these kind of DIY music venues, which doubled as a meeting space for our publication initially. They tend to pop up and then they go away, but then that sort of spirit still exists and is carried on in a different form or something. So maybe something was lost, but also maybe, something could, come of it. I mean, I think Iowa definitely needs more alternative journalism. I think that's definitely lacking in the state.
But. We're talking with Gavin Aronson, who was editor of The Progressive, defunct publication that covered stories in Ames that often were not covered by the traditional media. And Gavin is still in journalism, and you may have seen his byline in the Ames Tribune. You're one of the pretty busy reporters for the Trib. And I gather you'd say that the experience you got on the Progressive actually helped you develop your writing skills and your reporting skills, or am I wrong?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that was, my like I said, my initial interest is just giving me another venue, too, because I wasn't doing the same kind of reporting. I'm a city reporter for the Tribune now. I was doing just various freelance assignments started in 2007 through the time I left Ames. So I was kind of doing these two things concurrently at the time, which didn't really conflict. It was different things I was kind of focused on for each. And the two of those combined, gave me kind of a – definitely helped my writing. And then the internships and jobs I got out of state probably helped a lot more than
Well, you might mention a couple of the publications you worked for while you were out of Ames.
I interned for the Village Voice under Wayne Barrett. I was a research editor. He's like a four-decade muckraking journalist in New York who, along with the rest of the Village Voice, kind of – that was a sinking ship that I – got on board just in time to experience that, so that was great. And I didn't really write anything there for the most part. But then from that, I was able to get an internship at Mother Jones Magazine in San Francisco, and I worked there for, 2.5 years. I eventually moved out to D.C. and worked in the D.C. bureau of that magazine for 6 or 7 months before coming back to Iowa.
And here you are back in Ames, Iowa, practicing journalism. Do you miss the big city? And do you miss the alternative stories that you were able to cover at those publications and on the Progressive?
Yeah, I mean, there's upsides and downsides to either. I'm sure at some point in my life I'll get back into the alternative journalism world. There's a few people around town. We talk about this a lot where people leave to like a big city and they get some experience, and instead of just saying forsaking Iowa, they come back and they try to bring their skills back and spread it around. And I think that's a really great concept, and I was really actually excited to get back to Iowa when I moved back in the end of 2013. I don't know if I'm what I'm doing personally to contribute towards any of that.
Well, I think people would say you are. You do remind me of a World War I song about GIs who went to Europe during the war. How are you going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen Paris? And in your case, you've been out to Washington, New York, and San Francisco, and yet you're back in Iowa. And this is the thing about Iowa I've noticed. I'm not a native Iowan, and there is something magnetic about the place. It just seems to bring people back, often when they get a little older and want to raise a family. But in your case, you're still a pretty young guy.
No plans for a family.
But you obviously found something here that you liked, and in journalism as well as just the atmosphere of Iowa.
Thank you, Gavin, and we wish you well as Loris and Rick Lem for your present and future ventures.
Thanks for having me on.
And now we'll take you to the offices of The Web at Ames High School, where we spoke to three editors of The Web, as well as their faculty advisor, Mr. Darren Johnson. I'll let the students introduce themselves.
I'm Ella Bartlett, and I'm co-editor-in-chief of The Web.
I'm Will Fowler, and I'm the other co-editor-in-chief of The Web.
I'm Aaron Marner, and I'm one of the online editors of The Web.
My first question is, since we're talking about alternative business models, obviously, even though The Web is distributed with the Ames Trib, you're not part of Stevens Media. Could you explain what your relationship is in getting The Web distributed?
Well, we definitely aim mainly towards high school students, and it is nice to also to reach out to the community, and that's one of the good things that the Tribune provides us, is that we get that where parents can read it, where community members, and they can read what Ames High School is up to.
They're very kind to give us the opportunity to print and distribute everything for us within their paper.
Because it actually used to be, we would have a darkroom in here and we would print all the paper and all the pictures and do it ourselves, and now it saves us a lot of time.
When did the Tribune start doing your printing?
Hi, I'm Darren Johnson, and I'm the advisor to The Web. And from what I've gathered in the past, there was a time where the student journalists would go to the Tribune and do the layouts there, where they would even do some of the composing at the Tribune office. Starting in the 1990s, then we moved to desktop publishing, and most recently then we've been doing everything online. Now that the students have laptops, they're using some free software to put everything online. We just send the PDF to the Tribune. So we don't have a lot of physical contact with the Tribune anymore.
But they pay for the printing of your paper.
They greatly subsidize the printing of the paper, and so they sell the advertising, and they get the revenue from the advertising, and then they're selling us the printing of the paper at a reduced price, and they give us 1,000 copies at the high school, and then everyone in the 500-1014 zip code get the newspaper as well.
Every 4 weeks we put out a print issue, and then every 2 weeks we go online so that the print issue comes out. We put our stories, all of those stories that are in print, online, and then in between the print issues we do an online issue.
So are there two online issues then a month, or only one?
One is both online and in print, and then one is just online.
I believe that we have the editor of the online here. So could you tell what's involved in doing the online that is in addition to getting the articles that are in the print?
Well, a big part of it is just getting all of the articles, both in print and online. I mean, we focus on students, of course, first. We have staff bios on there and stuff, but the articles on there are also in print. Half of them are.
Let's talk about the other half, the ones that aren't in print that you put online.
There's not really like criteria for what goes online versus in print. Just the best articles usually make it in print. But that's not to say that the articles online are any worse. It's just,
we try to make the ones online more timely, especially in news and reviews, because those do have a time factor that's important. So online allows us to get those to the students in a faster way than print.
And as Will said, it's a lot quicker and more timely, because with the print issue, we print once a month. If there's a new story that happens a week after we print, then you don't want to wait 3 weeks to get that story out. So that's when the online issue comes into play.
What are the criteria for choosing your news stories?
We do a lot of brainstorming in here. We basically get our minds together and brainstorm a lot.
For news stories, we do try to have things that are news and then things that have a timeliness factor and various news factors. But we try to get things that focus on the student body and things that they would want to know and things that they would that they need to hear about that affect their lives.
And sometimes we do like to cover more national or even like statewide news, but normally we like to relate it to an Ames High student or the Ames High student body. So if there's someone who's experienced it in the... One of our writers has a friend who actually lives in Paris and who is experiencing the things that are happening with the terrorist attacks on Je Suis Charlie and everything. And so that's a good angle to get on a story that you could read in the Des Moines Register or other newspapers.
We are focusing on the alternative presses. Besides focusing more on the students, what do you think that you get that people can't get anyplace else?
We focus on the students, but mainly we have the perspective of the youth. There's no teenage paper that's run independently. I think one of the great things about the web is that, and just living in Iowa and having a student paper in Iowa, is that we're allowed to criticize the administration. We have a lot of liberty with what we say and publish, and it's really just a free forum for students that wouldn't exist otherwise.
How large is your staff?
22. Some people aren't here every day, but most of them are.
Do you have the same staff, or do you have some different people with the online version?
Same staff.
Well, of course, with your demographic, social media is a big thing. So I would imagine that Aaron is the one who specializes in social media. Is that right?
Yes. AJ and I, he's the other co-editor of the online edition. We run the Twitter account, and there's also a Facebook page, but that doesn't get updated quite as much. Yeah, certainly with high school students, a big thing is social media. So getting them to read articles that are online is a lot easier if we tweet out a link to an article. Oh, also, we have a GIF of the week. And if you don't know what a GIF is, it's like a moving picture. It's not a video, but it just loops over and over. So it's usually 5 or 6 seconds. So we have a GIF of the week online. And those are usually pretty funny and kind of pointless, but people like them.
And do you get news through your Twitter accounts or your Facebook account?
Not really. We follow KCCI news and local news and stuff like that, but we don't really worry too much about that.
Occasionally we'll tweet something out if it's something that we think is ultra urgent, and then we are able to kind of scramble the team fast enough. But generally we don't tweet out news.
We have tweeted out during school closings and delays and things like that.
I would like to see at least our newspaper move toward a little more social media, because it is such a big part of teenagers' lives nowadays that I'm afraid that print issue, even books, you know, we all have Kindles and we can access books online, that putting news online and that part of it is really important.
You were talking about this, what you'd like to see in the future. So what do you see for the future of the web?
Future of the web, I'll be gone. So I can't speculate exactly. I won't have that much control over it. But I trust that we'll make a good decision about who will be in charge next year and how we'll format it. I think the staff that we have now, especially the new staff, I think that there's a lot of potential there. And I think that as we make the transition to online and we try to get more people reading the online edition with the print edition, it'll be a challenge, but it's going to be what we have to do. I'm not sure if we'll ever lose the print edition, but we do have the online edition to fall back on if that happens.
In regard to losing the print edition, as journalists, do you feel that your training is equally appropriate for online publishing as for print publishing?
Yeah, I think so. I think knowing how to manage and navigate a website and how to post stories is very important. We have a grueling process of printing the paper. We spend about 6 hours in total, three each night, going over the print layout. And that is a process where we just put all the stories into a print format, a PDF format, so we can send it. Yeah, but I think knowledge in both areas are really important.
And I think one thing that, especially this year, we've started to do very well is we're now including a lot of hyperlinks in our stories. So we're linking to videos that might be relevant and other stories that might be relevant. We're learning how to take advantage of the benefits that can only be given by technology, like contacting people by email, interviewing by phone. GIF of the Week is great. And we even have a fashion blog.
So you have your own blog.
Emma Stewart has a fashion blog, and she is so passionate about it. It's wonderful. One thing that online allows her to do is put more pictures on. She can have a slideshow of like 4, 5, or 6 pictures, when in print we wouldn't have the space for that.
For some of our listeners who may not be quite so in tune with the internet possibilities, could you describe a hyperlink?
Hyperlinks are basically for more information. We've done a lot of hyperlinks that lead to articles who support or contradict or have more information.
To just give you like a technical description of what a hyperlink is, it's like there's when you're reading through an article and you see text, it's usually blue and underlined, and you can click on it and it will link you to a story or an interview or something that would be relevant to the story that you're reading.
Also with hyperlinks, it's a great way to show where you got your information. So if you're doing a more factual article, you can cite your sources that way and show exactly what you got your numbers from.
One of the things that we talked about a lot with the local newspapers was the issue of bias. And how do you try to be objective or do you have a different philosophy?
We like to stir up talk. That is, we like to make people think. We like to make people talk about things and discuss them. And I think if you have a strong opinion about something, it should be voiced. The newspaper is a great way to do that.
Of course, I've raised by section with news. We do try to be as objective as possible. But I think one of the good things about the web is that we don't necessarily have a unanimous opinion about everything. For instance, we've done many, many articles that are supportive of feminism. And this issue we're having, one of our writers is writing something of contrasting feminism. And we have very regular arguments in class that follow that. So I think it's good to have that mixed opinion and that those diverse views, because even if we're not necessarily being objective with a single article, as a whole paper, we're representing every view. At least we try.
I noticed that Catalyst was for Christian students. I wondered, what about Jewish and Muslim students, or Baha'is and Buddhists?
Yeah, we do have a large percentage of Ames High School students who go to clubs like FCA, which is Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and Catalyst. And those clubs meet in the mornings, and we do feature them. I think we've also featured a lot of other things. I don't know if we were going to do a feature on the Atheist Club, which actually never formed, but we were going to interview them. And then we've also done interviews on clubs such as Spectrum, which is the Gay Straight Alliance, and other things. So we try to keep our interviews diverse.
And I'm not sure to what degree Catalyst is school-sponsored.
It's run by Mrs. Seibert, who is an English teacher here, and she also does the Gay Straight Alliance Club.
We have an incredibly diverse school. I think we have many Muslims, we have a large Jewish population, Hindus, atheists, pretty much everything. But I think that we do try to keep an eye on if there's anything newsworthy that we could talk about that might be an issue or a concern.
If there were to be clubs, Jewish clubs or Muslim clubs, we would be so intrigued and enthusiastic of going to theirs as well. Just like we were for the Atheist Club, but that didn't work out. And just like we were for Spectrum and other minority groups too.
The students actually chose to put an ad in this last issue of the web where they're encouraging people to make a club. And so all the clubs that we have, the clubs and activities, those are student generated. So if students can get enough of their peers interested in having a club and find a teacher sponsor, they just have to have an adult here for liability purposes for when they're meeting. I mean, the forms that they fill out are very easy. So there could easily be any of the clubs that you talked about. We've had a variety of clubs that have fallen on the wayside just through the years as students' interests change and things like that.
There's no official sponsorship from this. I mean, from like the administration. It's just
there's no money.
Yeah, there's no money provided for most of the clubs. What the process is, a student would approach a teacher with an idea of a club, and then if the teacher agrees, the teacher sort of sponsors it, and that's like not like paying for it.
Yeah, like Will said, you know, there's no school money that goes into it, and it's easy to start a club. You just have to ask a teacher who is willing to, and we hope to get a lot of diverse clubs in the future.
Well, is there anything that you think that is important for the future of journalism or your futures? I'd be curious to know how many of you have an ambition or an idea that you might be a journalist.
Well, I know I want to do something with writing. The web has really helped me establish my love for writing and like my love for leading too. I mean, with Will, it's been a crazy trying to get 22 people all to write their stories on time. But yeah, no, I definitely have really enjoyed the atmosphere of the web, and I hope to continue something of it in my future.
Journalism is what I want to go into. It's totally my dream. And so I think this has been an excellent opportunity in the 2 years I've been in the web. I have learned so much, and I'm so glad that I've had the opportunity to both be an editor and a writer and deal with editors and deal with writers, because it's good practice.
I don't know if I'm going to go into journalism or not, but the web has been a great experience, and I've learned a lot doing it, and it's really a blast to get to work with your friends and your peers and people. Last year, when I was a junior, there were a lot of seniors on the staff, so I got to meet a lot of seniors and get to connect with a lot of people who are going into journalism or various fields. So it's a great experience.
I heard yesterday at a production meeting that there were a group of students from Ames High who had a program on KHOI. Is that true or not? Does anyone want to talk about that?
I'm not sure about Ames High. I know there are some from Gilbert who have a program called Blue Monday. They play music, and I've been on there once or twice with my friend Lydia.
You know the time.
Monday at 9, I think.
Monday at 9 p.m.
No, I actually haven't even heard of this, and this is wonderful because I think, I don't know, people, if they're interested in radio broadcasting, which I am a little actually, I would be psyched to have a club or something started at Ames High School similar to what's been started at Gilbert.
But one of the things we try to do on KHOI is to create community through communication. And we would just love to hear about any other radio clubs throughout our listening area. So please contact us at khoiradio@gmail.com. We've been listening to three of the editors from the Ames High Web. Two from the print edition, one from the online edition, Ella Bartlett and Will Fowler and Aaron Marner.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and today we've been talking about different ventures of the alternative press in central Iowa, the cartoon weekly Toons, the online publication Ames News Online, and the independent news commentary publication The Progressive. Student editors from the Ames High Web also joined us to show what a high school newspaper does to meet the interests of students.
Our guests today have been Rick Lem, Loris Olson, Gavin Aronson, Ella Bartlett, Will Fowler, Aaron Marner, and Darren Johnson. I have been one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with Tom Beal. Local Talk is engineered by Richard Morrison. Music you heard today included Too Much Fun by Commander Cody and his Lost Planet Airmen from their album Live from Deep in the Heart of Texas, and The Wave by Mike Snow from Flight Facilities Mix. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org, where we are streaming live. In addition, you'll find an archive for all of the Local Talk shows we've produced since we went on the air in 2012 on our website. Recent shows will be posted on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, can get the information. That's where you'll find names of our guests and links to the organizations and other resources mentioned on our shows.
If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of the 500 families donating $20 per month or $250 per year to help us make our operating expenses, though we'd appreciate whatever fits into your budget. We'd also like to hear your feedback either by phone at 515-292-2878 or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com with news in the subject line.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.